And also, I would like to remind the speakers who are joining them for the first time that we can actually state whether or not they have to disclose something. Just one sentence stating that. So first, we're going to hear, we're going to welcome Mrs. Mason right now, which is an MPhD, she's an assistant professor right now at St. Catherine University, which is located in St. Paul, Minnesota. And she will focus on the intersections of environment and human health, and particularly among marginalized populations. And today she's going to talk to us about improving refugee health and social connectedness through church gardens. Please welcome Ms. Mason.
Thank you. So I'll be talking to you today about a program evaluation that Dr. Carly Hartwig at St. Catherine University conducted with respect to church gardens and refugee health that I was a part of on the quantitative side. So we'll be talking about quantitative results today. I have no relationships to disclose. So the background for this project is that Minnesota is the 13th most common state for immigrant and refugees to land. Many of the populations that Jorge mentioned in his previous presentation, the spikes that you're seeing in Philadelphia, are the populations that are most prevalent in the Twin Cities. So refugees and immigrants in the United States, we know they face many stressors, learning a new language, navigating cultural norms, trying to find a new job, and that they also have a lot of traumas that they may bring with them that end up surfacing in their transition to the United States. We also know on the domestic side that community gardens have been shown to be very therapeutic. There's physical and mental health benefits that may help us alleviate some of the stressors that we're seeing in the refugee and immigrant population. In the Twin Cities, community gardens are common, but there's always a shortage. We would certainly like to see more. And many refugees that are coming to our cities are from an agricultural background. So the idea here is that Arrive Ministries, one of the faith-based resettlement programs in the Twin Cities, saw this as an opportunity to link people with agricultural experience to community gardens in the Twin Cities. We also have a lot of churches in the Twin Cities with quite large lawns that weren't getting used for any other purposes. Therefore, Arrive Ministries approached these churches and asked whether they could transfer these lawns into garden spaces for the refugee and immigrants. And we thought that the gardens for the refugees would serve the church desires to meet their outreach mission. So Arrive Ministries, as I mentioned, is a refugee placement agency in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Their job was to connect with the refugees with the faith-based community gardens. And by 2014, there were 19 churches serving more than 1,200 refugee and immigrant families. In order to find the right combination for the church gardens and for the proper immigrant and refugees, the Karen Organization of Minnesota, the Bhutanese Community of Minnesota, and CAPI for Asian Pacific Islanders were our coordinating agencies. Our objective was the program evaluation piece. So after these gardens were created, we wanted to know what the impact of the church-based gardening project was on the health of the immigrant and refugee gardeners participating in the program. The four pieces we focused on were social connectedness, physical health, mental health, and economic benefits. For the evaluation, we used 8 of the 19 churches, and our selection was based on the fact that these churches had participated for at least 2 years in the program. We wanted to include a mix of gardening sizes, small, medium, and large, large being over 60 pots. And the primary languages of the gardeners that we focused on were Karen and Nepali. For the evaluation itself, we used both qualitative and quantitative methods. So surveys were distributed in July and September of 2014, and focus groups were conducted in September and October at the end of the gardening season, as well as interviews with church volunteers after the harvest to get not only the perspective of the refugee and immigrants participating, but the volunteers as well. And Dr. Hartwig has a poster tomorrow addressing a lot of the focus group and interview results. Like I said, we'll focus on the survey and quantitative pieces today. So for our survey tool, we looked at vegetable intake, hunger, whether our group used food subsidies, depression scores, and social connectedness between gardeners and church members. So we'll walk through each of these individually. But first, our overall response rates were 44% in the early season, that's in July, and 45% in the postseason, with 64% of gardeners completing both surveys. Again, the surveys, we decided to translate them into Karen and Nepali to meet most of the needs of our population, and they were also provided in English. Our demographics, you can see that we did have a few Hmong gardeners as well that tended to be older than the rest of our population, but otherwise we're looking at the 35 to 40 years old as our average range for the gardeners. The majority of our gardeners were female, with an average family size of 5.5 people, although the range is from 1 to 13. Most of our population, again, the Hmong have been in our cities for an average of 25 years, but everyone else is between that 3.5 and 5.5 range. And only 18% of our population felt that they spoke English pretty well or fluently, and Dr. Hartwig's poster addresses how that was a barrier for some of the social connectedness pieces. And the average years of gardening before coming to the U.S., kind of in the range of 10 if you look at the individual averages, but overall we have a left skew distribution, so 2 is our average. So let's take a look at the actual results. For physical health, we focused on vegetable intake. You'll see that there was a statistically significant increase in the proportion of people eating vegetables every day, from about 62% to 78% in our population. But our population was already a good vegetable eating population, and they didn't change their variety of vegetables. So the good part was we increased their overall vegetable consumption, but their personal preferences still played into exactly what types of vegetables they were eating each day. For hunger, we asked this at the beginning of our season, and we asked two simple questions developed by the FAO. Was there a time in the past month when there was no food in the house, or did any individual go to bed hungry in the past month? Only 3 individuals in our population responded affirmatively, with family sizes of 4, 5, and 11, so we didn't feel the need to ask this at the end of the season. Luckily, our population did not exhibit hunger. On the flip side, 84% of our population did receive some sort of food subsidies, and this held steady both at the early season survey and the late season survey. At the end of the season, we also asked our population to estimate how much money they saved by participating in a community garden. 34% estimated that over the summer they saved $25 to $50 on their produce, and 27% estimated that they saved between $50 and $100. We examined depression using the PHQ-2, so 2 questions about depression. Over the past 2 weeks, how often have you been bothered by either little interest or pleasure in doing things, feeling down, depressed, or hopeless? If the respondent responded at least more than half of the days, this would be an indication that they would be recommended for further depression screening. This was not something that we then did for the group, but was a way for us to measure the depression in the population. There were some translation challenges, so we only asked this in the post-gardening survey, and we did not include the LISU members in this particular question. And notably, 15.4% of our surveyed individuals skipped the question. Of those who did not skip the question, the prevalence of depression was 11.7, which is higher than the U.S. average prevalence of depression. And all of these individuals were Karen, and there were 9 of them. So between the 11% that did respond and the 15% that didn't respond, we do think there's some level of depression in this population. So the interesting piece for us was then focusing on the social interactions. We wanted to know whether the churches were serving as a social network for the refugees and immigrants. And what you'll see is that the early season is in the light blue, the post season is in the dark blue, and we actually saw decreases in social interactions over time. These were measured by, do you greet your church members or neighbors sometimes or often in the garden? Do you ever share a drink with them, share a meal, share tools, or share vegetables? And you'll see that the percentage responding affirmatively to sometimes or often actually decreases over the course of the season, and that's statistically significant for the latter 3 measures. And we'll talk about that in a moment as well. We did look at whether the size of the garden, the presence of church member gardens in addition to just the refugee and immigrant gardens played a role in this. And that decrease was smaller when we looked at larger gardens and the presence of church members than no church members present. So they reduced the drop. But whether we had homogeneous or heterogeneous ethnic mixes did not influence the social interaction. So it seemed that larger gardens and the presence of church members reduced the gap in that drop. So we saw, again, in summary, to see that physical health, vegetable consumption did increase. And we think that the decrease in the interactions between members and gardeners over time was a result of the immigrants and refugees becoming more independent, the increased technical support available to the gardeners at the beginning of the season that then was not present in the later part of the season, and that the gardeners really came on their own schedule, so that there wasn't necessarily concrete interaction between the church volunteers and the gardeners. And I think the mixed methods are really useful in helping us to explain the findings of the survey data, which is in the poster tomorrow. And notably, 97% of these folks would recommend this to a friend or another new immigrant, which I think is very telling about their overall experience. So we'd like to see community gardens include more refugee and immigrant populations. We don't believe this has to be done particularly at churches. And we do think that there is definitely a physical health value as well as a mental health need that could be served by these gardens. And hopefully that even if we aren't developing connections between the refugees and the churches, at least they may be experiencing social connectedness with each other. So thank you.
There are one question for Professor Mason.
Yes, thank you.
I'm wondering why you chose depression to assess for a population of trauma, and why not use a trauma questionnaire or something related? How did you
sure.
decide on depression as the survey?
Sure. I think simply because the PHQ-2 was a simple measure, it's only two questions long and allows us to get a general sense of some mental health measure. But I think there's certainly a lot more about the mental and emotional health benefits that came out through the focus groups that may address some of the other mental health pieces that you're talking about.
Are you going to be publishing?
That is our intent. We have a manuscript in progress that we're hoping to put out there.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. There are more questions after the session. Thank you.